This is Vernon On Public Radio political reporter Ian Donis. We're back talking with the Democratic candidates for governor. The next question to Scott McKay.
We all know that Quonset Point has become a real fulcrum for job development in Rhode Island. There's a huge expansion in the submarine business down there at Electric Boat. There'll be a $30 million construction expansion down there. We also know there are an awful lot of building trades people out of work in this state. I'm going to start with you, Mr. Giroux. Should there be project labor agreements as governor? Would you push for that at Quonset Point to help our building trades people get back to work and hire union employees?
The jobs plan I have for Rhode Island is a commerce fund for small business and property owners. They get their furnace, their windows, hire their local contractor.
I'm saying that, but wait a minute. There's $30 million of construction to be done at Quonset Point. I'm asking a very specific question.
I've spoken with labor unions. They say, yes, we'd like to have jobs training. We'd like to we'd work with WPA-type programs. And, yes, I agree with that. We need a solid living wage here in Rhode Island, and I think we need to encourage folks to job training and back to work.
Mr. Pell, a project labor agreement, do you believe that's the right way to go for the building trades at Quonset Point?
Sure. And I think that we need to do more than that at Quonset Point. I think that we have an incredible asset, not only at Quonset, but at the Port of Providence and at the ports of our state. And as governor, I'm going to create a port authority. It's something that Commerce RI has the statutory authority to do right now, and I'm going to actually do it.
Looking now next at Angel Tavares, please. A project labor agreement down there at Quonset Point, wouldn't that be good for the building trades?
Well, I think when the government is involved and given benefits to a developer, I think it's right to put requirements on what you want to see. I'm proud of the fact that as we see the Dynamo House, the South Street Power Station, that will be a $200 million project, we can expect to see a lot of our building trades working there. I'm proud of the fact that not too far from here, the Fogarty Building, as we're beginning to work to see that happen, we're going to see a lot of our folks from the building trades working there. If the government is part of it, I think it's important to make sure that people know exactly the type of jobs we want to have.
Ms. Raimondo, project labor agreement at Quonset Point for the building trades folks.
I do support project labor agreements for, you know, large-scale projects that the government is involved in and provides subsidies to. And we've seen, you know, there were PLAs for the airport, for the mall, so they can be successful. And at a time right now, the unemployment rate in the building trades in Rhode Island is 20-25%. I was with a guy the other day. He's an electrician. He has three kids. He's been out of work for 18 months. We got to get these guys back to work, which is also why I've put forth a robust infrastructure plan, rebuilding schools, roads, and bridges to get these laborers back to work and to do it quickly.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Maureen Moakley.
I'd like to ask the candidates a little bit about campaigns and elections and to do with some of their ads. Mr. Powell, you have an interesting ad that talks about the fact that you want to change the culture here in Rhode Island and that you are not accepting certain contributions from lobbyists and other special interests. Yet the fact is that you have invested considerable personal wealth in your campaign. What do you say to candidates who do not have that kind of advantage and perhaps therefore cannot make that kind of pledge?
I think that the system of campaign finance in this state and this country is fundamentally broken. I think that money in politics is a real problem and that right now there is a real problem of the influence of state lobbyists and political action committees. And so drawing a bright line distinction and refusing to accept contributions, financial contributions from those same people who are paid to influence the decisions that the governor is going to make, I think that's inappropriate. And so I absolutely am proud of my decision not to accept contributions from PACs and state lobbyists.
Ms. Raimondo, in terms of your some of your advertisements, they're charming in the way that they talk about your roots and your family and so forth. But you have been criticized for your out-of-state funding, the considerable amount of money that is contributed to your campaign from out-of-state. How do you respond to critics that that take issue with that, particularly in terms of your ties to financial services?
You know, campaigns are expensive, and we're not all lucky enough to be able to, you know, have a big check written by our family, so campaigns are expensive. Here's the important point. It's who you're accountable to. I'm accountable to the people of Rhode Island. Everything I've done as treasurer, whether it's fighting against payday loans, fixing the pension system, improving the crime victims program, has been for the people of Rhode Island. Furthermore, as treasurer, I have imposed stricter campaign finance rules, stricter than any treasurer in Rhode Island history. I had early in my term, I put in place a policy which says I will not take any campaign contributions from investment managers that do business with the pension fund. And I now require all investment managers to sign a pledge which certifies that they do not give money to my campaign, because if they do, they're disqualified. So I agree with Mr. Pell. Campaign finance in America needs to be revamped. Citizens United was a terrible decision. It needs to be undone. I'm very pleased we've signed a People's Pledge. It's a great thing. Rhode Island, we're going to keep out all that outside money. And in the meantime, the question the people of Rhode Island have to ask is, who are we accountable to? And in my case, I think it's crystal clear where I'm from, who I'm fighting for, and why I'm running for governor, which is to make college affordable, raise the minimum wage, get people back to work, and move this state forward.
Mr. Giroux, might we be critical of you because you've raised so little money? Should you be taken seriously as a candidate when you really haven't been have the capacity in many respects to get your message out?
Maureen, we have a real Main Street versus Wall Street race here in Rhode Island. These folks have millions. We have hundreds. I'm the guy fighting for my house, like 150,000 Rhode Islanders here. And, you know, so I say that, you know, these messages about, it's no surprise that I'm the guy talking about bringing repaid TARP for Rhode Island. $5 billion could be a game changer for our state, create trust funds of investment for infrastructure, for healthcare, funds that spin off interest, take pressure off the state budget, towns and property taxpayers, Rhode Island. Maureen, I'm a serious candidate in this race. I've been taken seriously since day one, and I'm here to fight.
Okay. Mr. Tavares, I'd like to ask you about voter ID. Most of the people in the state approve of voter ID, yet the two Democratic candidates are running for Secretary of State to repeal it, simply repeal it. What's your policy and position on voter ID?
I would support a repeal of voter ID. I think it was a bad law. I have worked as an elections lawyer, as you know, and had a chance to observe a lot of elections in Rhode Island. And the fact of the matter is that this voter ID issue has a disproportionate impact on low-income people and minorities. There have been studies to show that out of New Jersey. I know that there are studies to show that. And I don't want...
We have a different law.
With respect to that, you still need identification. I don't believe it's a good law. I believe it's going to hurt people and their ability to go out and vote. And I don't believe it was necessary in Rhode Island, and I don't favor it.
We're going to start the next question with Gina Raimondo. What is the greatest personal challenge you faced in your life other than the death of losing a loved one? How did you overcome it? And please don't tell us about the pension overhaul of 2012, because we're asking about a personal challenge.
Okay. Although losing your father in the middle of a campaign and having to grieve publicly is a real challenge. But if we don't want to talk about that, you know, I would say I have led a very good life, but a great challenge is being a mother. I have two kids, and raising two children today is hard. And we're doing the best we can. Thank God I have an amazing husband. I have my mother. I was going to say my parents. I have my mother who took care of my kids, especially when they were little. You never know if you're doing the right thing. You never know if you're doing enough. Every morning begins with chaos. But people say to me, how do you do it all? Well, you get through the day. And whatever got you through today may or may not work for tomorrow. I'll deal with tomorrow. But I've never worked harder at anything in my life, and I've never cared about anything more in my life as I have being a mom.
Mr. Giroux, you've had less exposure from not holding public office than your colleagues here. What is the top personal challenge that you've had to face, and how did you overcome it?
My personal challenge here has been I took care of both of my parents. They're both passed. But we're watching my dad work hard 7 days a week for years in the construction trades as a union painter, painting bridges, City Hall, Davao Square, the Howard Building, Federal Reserve, all these places around the city. And, you know, losing my home, fighting for my home, Ian, I put $300,000 down on my house when I had a couple hundred thousand in the bank. And I'll tell you what, when you get a pissing contest with that bank and they don't want to work with you, that's a challenge. And that's why I fight. And I fight for all of those 150,000 people in Rhode Island. And if the unemployed people and the people losing their homes understand there's a guy, a Main Street guy, talking about a real jobs plan in the state, I will win by a landslide.
Angel Tavares, same question to you. And again, we don't want to hear about the Category 5 fiscal hurricane in Providence and coming back from that. What is the greatest fiscal the greatest personal challenge that you've faced, and how did you overcome it?
Well, I think, Ian, for me, probably the biggest personal challenge is believing that I could be something I hadn't seen, believing that I could grow up and be a lawyer, being the son of a working mom who worked in factories to raise three kids, and believing that I could achieve and I could be sitting up here as the mayor of the city of Providence and as a candidate for the highest office in this state. I've done that with a lot of love and support. I've done it with an extraordinary mother who has worked to commit herself to her kids, and with a sister who was really the role model and still is to me and to my family. So I would say to you that overcoming those challenges have been quite a journey, and I'm looking forward to writing that next chapter.
Clay Pell, same question to you. What is the greatest personal challenge that you faced? What did you do about it?
I've been very fortunate in my life, but I learned a lot watching my father go through bankruptcy and go through cancer. I learned how hard one has to fight, and that it's okay to take a big risk, even when you're an underdog, and to stand up for what it is you want to do and what it is that you want to believe in. And I think that's really why I'm in this, because I want to take a stand and stand up for people, not to stand up for myself or to fight for any particular group, but to represent the people of this state who are going through really difficult times and need a voice for them.
Our next question from Scott McKay.
This is for Ms. Raimondo.
This should go to
excuse
Angel
me. I'm very sorry, Angel. If Hillary Clinton decides not to run for president, Angel, who would be your first choice for president and why?
Well, first and foremost, I hope that she does run for president, and I'm part of the Ready for Hillary group that has a lot of grassroots and some not-so-grassroots support across the country. With respect to that, in terms of if she doesn't run, I really don't know. I would say to you that I like Governor O'Malley from Maryland and the work that he's done, particularly around education and making sure to improve education. Maryland has done very, very well with that. He's also has great experience, so I know that he's one person. I'm a big fan as well of hopefully the future Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Julian Castro, San Antonio Mayor. So we'll see what happens in the future.
Thank you. Clay Pell, same question.
Well, right now, I like Vice President Biden. I think he's been a phenomenal leader for this country. But always remember that there are going to be people who emerge that we might not even have heard about quite yet. And I'm a big believer in a new generation of leadership and seeing what emerges, because I think we really need younger people in particular getting involved in the leadership of this country to change the politics that's been holding us back for so
Gina
long.
Raimondo, same question.
Well, I'm ready for Hillary. I'm an unabashed Hillary supporter. I think it's time for a woman.
Well, if she doesn't
time
run
for a
is
leader.
The question.
Well, I'm not going to entertain that possibility. I think Hillary should be our next president. And if she chooses not to, then we'll see who emerges.
Mr. Giroux.
I'd like to see Elizabeth Warren run for president. I think she's doing a great job taking on the banks and the industry. And so I'd support her 100%.
Our next question will be from Maureen Moakley. Candidates, we're putting you on a strict 45-second limit because we're running short on time in this segment.
Okay, I want to ask you about HealthSource Rhode Island. It was created by executive order, and some people argue that it's a step in the right direction. Others argue that we should, in fact, expand it to include large businesses and perhaps some municipalities. Others see it as an expensive road to socialized medicine. What's your evaluation, Mr. Pell, of HealthSource so far?
Well, I am proud of what President Obama has done on the Affordable Care Act, and I'm proud of what Rhode Island has done with HealthSource RI. I will support it, absolutely. I've seen on the trail how it's helped people get access to health care. I think that is a critical challenge for our small businesses, for our people, and I will support it every single day. And it's part of making sure that we stand up for our people in this state again.
Ms. Raimondo?
I also supported us. I'm a supporter of the Affordable Care Act, and I think Rhode Island has done an excellent job rolling out HealthSource Rhode Island. Almost every day, or certainly every week, I hear from someone who says, because of HealthSource, I'm able to buy health insurance. Everyone deserves an opportunity for affordable access to high-quality care. So I think we need to commit ourselves to that. And I do think also over time, we're going to see that the promise of HealthSource, which is to lower cost, will come to be the case. In the end, it will lower cost for individuals and also small businesses, but most importantly, provides access to care, which is what every Rhode Islander deserves.
Mr. Giroux, what do you think about the program so far?
I think it's a wonderful program. Many people I know have had teeth pulled and are getting access to medical care they didn't have. Myself, I didn't have health care for 14 years, so I can say it was a great relief to have health care Rhode Island back in the state. It's one of the reasons why I talk about creating a trust fund for health care. And we could do this with some of this repaid TARP money. $1 billion trust fund for health care, creating interest, will help pay for the program and lessen the stress on the budget and property taxpayers.
Mr. DeBarris, can I ask you, what about ideas about expanding it, using the infrastructure to allow big business in, to really make this a system that's more efficient and drives down costs because it's being more inclusive?
Well, let me say first and foremost, I support HealthSource Rhode Island. I think Governor Chafee deserves credit for the executive order. I think Christine Ferguson has done an outstanding job leading it, and it has been a positive example for us. In terms of expanding that, we need to be as responsible as we can to make sure to provide access to health care to as many people as possible. One thing I would say is what I would not support is us stepping back or eliminating it. It's because that is short-term thinking, and that's part of what the problem is in Rhode Island. We think too often in the short term and not in the long term. We have a program that we've done, it well. We should do everything we can and make sure to continue to provide that service.
And expand.
I would like to work with Mrs. Ferguson, to make sure that we do everything we can to provide that service to as many Rhode Islanders as possible.
With 2 minutes left, Todd Giroux, do you support a line item veto for the governor? And if so, how would you get the Democratic General Assembly to accomplish it?
I do. I have a lot of support in the middle of politics here, in the left and the right. And I think I think everyone in politics sort of has this idea that we move so
quickly
forward so fast that we don't look back to say we already have a law for that. But I think there's a lot of support to get some programs working.
We've got to move on. Angela Ferris, line item veto, how would you get it through the legislature?
I support the line item veto. We have one in the city of Providence. I would sit down with members of the House, members of the Senate. I have a lot of support.
Thank you. Sorry, got to stop you there. Clay Pell, same question to you.
I support it, but I think the real issue in the state is a lack of leadership, and that's why we need a new governor who's going to aggressively push a forward vision for the state.
Gina Raimondo, do you support a line item veto, and how would you get it through the Democratic legislature that doesn't show much interest in it?
I absolutely support a line item veto, and I have a track record. I'm the only one up here with a track record of working successfully with the General Assembly. 90% of the members of the General Assembly voted for pension reform.
Sorry, got to stop you there. We're going to take a short break, and we're just up against the clock. Sorry about that. This is a special live one-hour political roundtable on Rhode Island Public Radio. We'll be coming back shortly with the candidates asking each other questions.